Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
And I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're moving on to 1998, featuring one of Autechre's most beloved albums, LP5, and then on to 1999 with one of Autechre's most beloved EPs, the album length EP7. 1999 also saw the initial broadcast of Autechre's second Peel session, later released in 2000, but we'll get to that on a bonus episode next week, along with any listener emails that we don't get to today. That means you've still got time to tell us what you think about LP5 and EP7. Gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Our next proper episode, 2 weeks from now, will be on Confield and Gantz graphs, so email us about those as well, gonkcastpod@gmail.com, or tweet us at gonkcastpod. Lastly, don't forget to subscribe, tell a friend about the show, and leave us a 5-star rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. We really appreciate it. Okay, we got a lot of ground to cover today. I complained, I think, on our last bonus episode about how we weren't getting that many emails about these two releases, and then they started coming, and I just kept adding comments, so this might be a long one. But Dan, why don't you tell us what background info we need to know about LP5?
Yeah, Autechre released their fifth album on July 13th, 1998. It was released by Warp Records, of course, but the U.S. release was handled by one of Gabe's heroes, Trent Reznor, in his Nothing Records, which briefly covered U.S. distribution for Warp before Warp expanded into the U.S. market in 2001. Interestingly, Chiastic Slide wasn't released in the U.S., so I guess shout out to Trent for solving that problem. LP5, as it's come to known, is technically untitled. It went by Autechre or Album up until the 1999 release of EP7, after which everyone, including Warp, just started calling it LP5.
Yeah, in contrast to the divisive Chiastic Slide, LP5 was very well received. Pitchfork gave it an 8.4 out of 10 and described it as a much-needed update to the Autechre sound. AllMusic called it uncompromisingly cutting edge in a glowing 4.5-star review, and it's currently the highest-rated Autechre album on Rate Your Music with an average rating of 3.80. Actually, breaking news, I just checked before we started recording, and Tri Repetae has reached 3.80 as well. So damn. I guess Tri Repetae reigns once again. There are some detractors, of course, like The Wire, who called it a little overwrought, and Piero Scaruffi, if you care what he has to say, who called it a, quote, minor work compared to Autechre's previous masterpieces. But I wonder, Dan, what's your impression of LP5's stature here in 2020?
You know, LP5 sort of seems like it's the fan favorite. You know, Tri Repetae is the one that, people who aren't like into Autechre but know an album or just a little bit about them, you know, they know Tri Repetae. But I feel like, you know, the people who are into Autechre, like, generally love LP5. You know, it seems like the real, it's the Revolver, you know. Everyone knows Sgt. Pepper's, but, you know, Revolver, the true fan favorite.
I think I've got the opposite take, honestly. I feel like LP5 is, and we'll get into all this stuff, but I feel like it's quite an accessible release. I think it's generally seen as like an iconic electronic release of the 90s. And, you know, your average listener knows about it along with Tri Repetae. But I feel like I don't hear fans talk about LP5 all that much. I don't know what it is, but it's just like, I don't know. I almost want to say the opposite to what you said and say it's sort of like, your average Joe's favorite, your dad's favorite Autechre record, whereas like the fans are just not as into it.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess sort of going, and this sort of gets to our next point a little bit, but, you know, going on my own personal history, you know, Tri Repetae was like the one I heard about, and that was the first Autechre record I listened to. And, as I dug in, I eventually got around to LP5 and, you know, grew to love it and stuff. But I guess you're right. You don't hear as much, like, talk about it. But I mean, then again, besides the like Autechre subreddit and, you know, various corners of Twitter, you know, how much Autechre talk are we really hearing here?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, I just feel like I browse those forums and stuff. And
yeah.
Like every day there's a thread about like, holy shit, Choristus is amazing. You know, I didn't realize it before. Like Draft is so genius, you know, but like nobody ever seems to talk about LP5. And it might be because it's so obviously good. But, you know, we'll interrogate that. In regard to my personal history, it's possible that I'm imposing my own feelings onto it because I got into LP5 pretty early on. I mean, it was so well reviewed, you know, I had to, and loved it back in the day. And I rarely revisit it. I don't know what the deal is. It's like sometimes when I feel like listening to Autechre, but I know it's going to like piss off my girlfriend or something, I'll think, well, LP5 is like kind of friendly, kind of catchy and not so insane. So I'll throw that one on. But other than that, I just rarely return to it. So I was very excited to get to this episode and like really spend a lot of time with it again and figure out, you know, am I wrong or like what's the deal with this? So let's dive in. How would you describe the overall sound of LP5?
Yeah, I think here, you know, we've gone completely mechanical. It's got a cold, humanless, you know, kind of feeling to it. This very much sounds like computer music, you know, as people would describe. You know, I think that this is sort of like the sound that people equate with Autechre, or you know, the emotionless. You know, we went through it with that weird quote from the band last episode. You know, but you know, this is the sort of emotionless, you know, bleeps and boops kind of Autechre that. I think not to keep harping on this same point, but you know, you say like you put this one on to not piss off your girlfriend. You know, we've talked about it. My wife also hates Autechre, and I feel like LP5, I'd be pushing my luck. You know, it's just you know, she complains about her, you know, jokingly complains about the, you know, the beeping and the booping. And I feel like LP5 is when we're officially getting to, you know, beeping and booping.
That's true. I mean, I guess I would hesitate to use the word mechanical, because when I think mechanical, I think of like, you know, the rusty machines that are making tri-repete. Whereas
yeah,
this is
I
like
don't mean
purely digital. I mean, this is like such clean, high def computer sound.
I don't mean industrial. I guess mechanical is sort of a, you know, a bad way to mean. I mean, you know, mechanical in the sense that you know, it's a machine making it, not you know, not a human playing a keyboard kind of thing. But yeah, it's sort of a poor choice of words. I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean
a digital machine.
It just sounds like a full jump into like the digital realm, into the computer world. And you know, I think about like it's a fairly I don't know. It's a sleek, like stripped down album in some ways, because, you know, we're coming off of like Sickly Sweet, right, on our last main episode. And that got into some of this, I think, digital programming with like these really complex, you know, shape shifting sort of beats. And this is like a, I don't know, it's just an even sparser version of that, where there are, you know, if Sickly Sweet was like abstract shapes, this is like just clean lines or something, because you know what I mean? It's fairly minimal. It's usually like some sort of clattering beat, but then the beat has been, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about the mixing, which I think is bizarre, but it's like been kind of squashed so that it sounds like it has this sleek surface to it. And then there's usually like one or two very light, like paper thin synth lines kind of giving you the main melody. You know what I mean? It's like amazingly sparse.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's like, you know, you're sort of in one way right, you know, when you said this is almost easy listening, Autechre. I think it is like the easy listening of the you know, computer age, because you're right. Yeah. It does have this like, you know, minimal you know, sleek, you know, like very kind of polished sound for something. But I think that's like what makes it kind of sound so digital. You know, we've talked about some of the other records, like some of them sound like, you know, it was recorded from an amp, you know, like onto tape or whatever. Like this record, I don't know how it was actually recorded, but you know, it sounds like it was maybe just recorded directly digitally, you know, it not you know, not played over you know, some sort of PA or anything. So I agree with you.
And I'm struck by like the, you know, a couple things. One is like the lack of reverb. There's almost like negative reverb on this record. The sounds are so clean. They are so distinct. They're not blending together. I mean, Chiastic Slide was like this murk, you know what I mean? And this is like so distinct sounds. And yet they're kind of like squashed. It's just so fascinating to me, because I want to ask you what you make of this. It's like a lot of the record is almost in mono. And I just wonder if it was like they wanted these clean sounds that that never blended together, with like no reverb use, like no real layering or anything, and pretty minimal and sparse, but they didn't want it to sound like just empty and dead. So they crammed it all like right into the, you know, mono channel. And it makes for like a weird squashed. I think that's where I get that like kind of sleek surface to everything feeling. But isn't that weird?
Yeah, it is. I think it you know, we've mentioned almost every album before this, and it is really like a headphone kind of thing. You know, it really like you find these other layers and you know, things that you didn't notice. But you're right. You know, LP5 is seemingly almost mono at the time. Not to say that there's not some you know, benefit in headphone listening or whatever, but I feel like LP5 is like the one that kind of works best just on like a stereo, you know, kind of thing. Like you know, when we listen to these records, I have like a little Bluetooth you know, speaker that I listen to, you know, when I'm working and stuff. But then, you know, I always make sure to, you know, go through the headphone one, and usually I enjoy the headphone experience more with these records. But honestly, with LP5, I really prefer the speaker you know, yeah, aspect of it. And I think you're right. You know, it's sort of that mono kind of thing, which, you know, I honestly love. I have like an affection for mono. You know, anytime I can get my hands on a mono version of something, I tend to prefer it.
They play with it in kind of an interesting way. I mean, it's light, but like, if, you know, you listen to like Acro Year 2, it's like almost in mono. It's just squashed. And it's interesting because it's quite clattery, but it still sounds like just very clean, you know, because it's so squashed. And then at the end where it turns into like something like a noise freak out, it spreads into the stereo channels and it's like shocking, you know, when it happens. Mm-hmm. Or like my favorite, you know, part of this whole record, honestly, you know, I'll spoil it a little bit, but Cork, I think, is my favorite song here. And it's like pretty squashed, but there are these like really beautiful, you know, synth pad kind of things, and there's like echoes that sort of ring out into the wide stereo space, and it just makes like the most disorienting but fascinating feeling. So I like that they play with it, but it's bizarre, honestly, how so little is taking advantage of that extra space in the mix. The last thing I want to highlight is you know, you kind of alluded to it, but like a lack of recognizable sounds. And what I mean by that is, in all the records we've talked about so far, I'm like able to compare the sounds to like physical objects, or I'm always struck by how they feel like physical objects that exist in the world. So I'm like, you know, I kept talking about this with Sickly Sweet in particular, where it's like, this feels like a very small sound, you know, this feels like a huge sound, you know, and like the way they would play with it. This, I have no sense of size or physical space ever because it is so digital. You know what I mean? It's like, I think of like the track Arch Carrier, right? Where these like string stabs, these low string stabs kind of come in. And it's like the only time on almost the whole record where I'm like, oh, that's a recognizable sound from the real world. Everything else is like purely just like a digital construction, you know, existing in the matrix or something.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I mean, I think that's one reason I love this record is because, you know, I can't really think of anyone else that does something like that, you know, like even other, you know, digitally created, you know, electronic records. It's still like there, you know, there's some sort of like recognizable synth or, you know, a drum sample or something. But like on LP5, you know, it's like half the time the percussion like is just like, it doesn't sound like, you know, typical percussion, you know, like obviously this noise is like taking the place of what a hi-hat, you know, would do.
Right.
But it
right,
doesn't sound anything like a hi-hat, you know, and even the, you know, the synth sounds, everything, you're right. There's like nothing that's like really, you know, like, oh, I know what that is. You know, that's a, you know.
Well, honestly, though, I kind of want to like disagree a little bit in the sense of, like, let me read this first listener email. Again, we got a lot of great listener emails, and I want to kind of bring them into the conversation. So this one's from Key. He says, it sounds like computers played a much larger role in the production of this album. The synths have a dry, artificial, almost 2D quality to them, while the percussion is much busier and fussier in general. The Nord lead is also known to have took care of a lot of heavy lifting here. Presumably, that's the papery thin pads of Ray and Cork, or the squelching, crunchy, dissonant FM synthesis on tracks like Acro Year 2 or 777. You know, he mentions the Nord lead there, right? And I, you know, was doing some YouTubing, and I'm a little familiar with this synth anyway. I mean, it's like very popular. But, you know, I'm struck by the lack of sound design on this record in a weird way. You know, I agree with what you're saying a minute ago, but it's like for the most part, I feel like these are very clean synth sounds, and I'm not like, how the hell did they make that noise? You know, I can totally imagine all the synth, all the musical parts of this album. You know, like you think of like those nice pads on Ray, like that Key mentioned there. Like, that's pretty standard. I mean, like, Boards of Canada makes melodies like that. I mean, it's just like standard use of like a synth lead or something. And then, I don't know, my theory is that composition is really the focus here, because I'm not ever thinking like, what is that, you know?
Yeah, I guess I see where you're getting at. But I mean, definitely composition is the thing here. And I think especially in regards to the percussion, I mean, you know, obviously electronic music is like sort of focused around like, you know, the beats or whatever. But I think some of the percussion here is like nuts, you know, like Acro Year 2.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that just, you know, after that little, you know, sort of toy-like intro thing,
right.
It just busts out, you know. I mean, it's frantic, you know.
I know. I wrote down that, like, it feels like a drum fill for the entire track.
Yeah, you know, it's exactly. Just like, I mean,
it never stops.
It's like Venetian snares, kind, you know, breakcore,
right.
kind of thing. And I mean, even 777 like has a little bit of that. In fact, I think like a good deal of the first bit of the record is like sort of frantic. It sort of chills out how as we move along, you know, it comes and go, you know, it's not 100%, you know, it comes in waves a little
yeah.
bit, but
I mean,
go ahead.
I did want to highlight 777 in the sense of like the main focus there is like this, I don't know how to describe it, like a shuddering bass drum or something. Like, I feel like my, mm-hmm. my face is pressed up against a glass window and it's just being shaken, you know? And it's like, it's totally crazy. But then, you know, there are a couple tracks where I jotted down, you know, like on Cork, for example, it's got like a 777 kick drum light. Like, it's got a little bit of a thud to it, but, you know, and it feels close to your head in a way, but it's like, you know, 777 is almost the one time where I feel like just the noise of this drum is the most important thing here. Whereas a lot of other tracks like Ray and stuff, I'm like, oh, this is like a beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's different. It's different for Odd Ticker because I've been
yeah.
so obsessed with the sound design, and now it's like, oh, these are songwriters all of a sudden.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, the composition here, I think that's something that like Odd Ticker in general, you know, is underrated on is the composition. You know, everybody thinks of this, you know, the sound design and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, they really can just write like a good song too. And, you know, I think they do that here, especially so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but I just feel like this is the episode where I'm going to get in trouble because I feel like I'm not as hot on this album as a lot of people are, especially the people that wrote to us. But it's just like, that might be the main reason. Is like, I feel like sound design is second to the song composition, and there's a lot of like incredible composition here. But, you know, on that note, I want to read another part of Key's email. He says, often the tracks are very fast and have so much detail in them, your mind kind of gives up trying to process it all and focuses on the sweet background stuff. You know, I think this is very insightful because when you talk about like Acro Year 2, it is so frantic, like we were saying, that, you know, I don't even know how to, I was trying to follow it and be like, is the beat like changing a lot? And it does sort of like rework itself into a different form for the second half of the track. But I'm like, is this changing or is this just a loop or what? I mean, it's so frantic. And all you can focus on is this quite catchy little melody, like this high melody. And because the tracks are so sparse, that's kind of like the thing that catches your ear, is like that nice little melody. I mean, I wonder, do you think that, you know, I mentioned earlier, I think that this is kind of an accessible album. Do you kind of agree with this, that like a lot of the tracks are so frantic that you end up just sort of focusing on like quite a pretty simple melody?
It's a neat sort of trick, you know, like that, because it is so frank, you know. I mean, when you listen to like Venetian snares, I think like everything about, you know, not just the you know, drums are so frantic, like everything about it is, you know,
yeah,
so frantic here. Yeah, it's like a trick that, like, since the drums are so crazy, you would almost think that would like draw your attention to them, but it's kind of does the opposite, you know. It's like by making them so like, you know, unattainable or whatever, you look into the background for everything else.
And I think that squashing of the mix, I think, also really assists in that, because it doesn't sound like, you know, if Acro Year 2 was like fully in stereo and all of those things were like really separated in the mix, you would like find yourself listening to different parts. It wouldn't sound like such a crazy chaotic, you know, mess as it does. I don't mean that in a bad way, but like you would probably zero in on different sounds, but you just can't.
Yeah, exactly.
It's squashed.
Exactly. You know, there would be, you know, space in between. You know, you could focus, you know, the toms are on your left or, you know, the snares on your right kind of thing. You know, it's easier to focus on things, you know, when they're split up that way. So I definitely agree. It's a really awesome trick, I think. As far as accessibility, I don't think on first listen, you know, say somebody who's not familiar with Autechre, not really familiar with, you know, electronic music in general, I think Acro Year would be a little scary, you know, because I don't think that trick,
maybe.
I don't think that trick will work on the first, you know, listen. I think right away you're going to be, you know, drawn to that franticness and, you know, I don't think that's the kind of thing that like a lot of people, you know, easily find enjoyable. You know, it's not it's not like connected to the pop music or the, you know, rock kind of world at all. And so I think, you know, like my wife,
I don't know.
You
know? I think she
would bail on that, but I agree.
But if you played your wife, Ray, she would find that sweet, right?
That's what I was going to say. You know, if Acro Year wasn't the opening track, you know, but I do definitely think there's plenty of moments in this record that, you know, are accessible. In fact, you know, Radiohead, Kid A, I couldn't think of it for a second. You know, like one of their big, you know, inspirations they said for it was Autechre. And I think it's very obvious that they mean LP5 in a lot of spots. You know, that little beginning noise in Acro Year 2, that distorted voice that's in under BOAC, those are like super, you know, like Radiohead kind of,
right.
I don't want to say ripped off, but you know what I mean? You know, kind of thing. And I think that lends to the accessibility, you know, I mean, like Radiohead, you know, is obviously an accessible band, and stuff. And I think like they were able to distill something like this down.
Yeah. Like the sound is easily
exactly distilled,
turned,
you know,
into a pop context or something like that. I mean, yeah, I totally agree with that. And but I just feel like, I don't know, there are a lot of tracks like Fold 4, Rap 5. I feel like that's strikingly beautiful. I feel like anybody would immediately be like, wow, this is a beautiful composition. Cork, same way. You know,
I think Drain 2 even, you know.
Possibly. A little noisy, a little clattery. But yeah. But let me read, you know, we got another email from listener Blue Shades. He said, I think LP5 is the strongest Autechre album. There are many more albums that I think are much more mind-blowing, interesting, or ambitious. That might be what I'm kind of getting at. But LP5 is honestly just banger after banger. I mean, he's got a point, honestly, because that might be just the nature of this album is like, if you're looking for mind-blowing, you know, the sound design is not quite there, but do you think they want to just make an album of bangers?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely got a point, you know, that really could be it, because he's right, you know? I mean, this isn't the most, you know, mind-bending Autechre album, you know? They do way, you know, crazier stuff here, but I mean, pound for pound, like every track here, I think there's no real, like, wasted space or, you know, just moments that don't need to be there. Even these like sort of quick little interlude tracks like Melv and you know, Caliper Remote. I think they're even, you know, like worth their salt and are pretty nice. You know, like Melv is like a pretty like sweet little, you know, melody and everything. I really agree with him.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's like a wildly different approach from what any Autechre album has been so far. Is like, it does keep delivering the goods, and it's kind of like a really, in my opinion, like just really kind of approachable, accessible, easily understood, like sweet melody usually is like at the forefront, and then the insanity is like underneath it, you know? So, you know, so I don't know, it's just very different. Let's talk about how LP5 relates to earlier releases, the albums we've talked about You know, do you think it's a massive update like Pitchfork seems to think? Do you think it's more of like a left turn? I mean, what would you be thinking in 1998?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's a massive update. You know, I don't think like it's like, oh man, this isn't the same band that made, you know, Tri Repete or you know, Chiastic Slide or any, you know, even Incunabula or anything. But I mean, it's definitely like something different. But and I've always sort of like known this, you know, but like really deep diving into each of these LPs, you know, I mean, basically spending 2 weeks, you know, with each of these LPs, where in normal, you know, listen throughs, you know, I'd spend a couple days or so with each one. I think I'm like really seeing, you know, how like much they do change between release and release, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess I would go with Left Turn, you know, kind of thing. But it's still a strange thing because it feels like the same band, but it feels like the same band doing something, you know, different, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if this was 1998, I would just be like, oh, yeah, every album has been like a wild left turn, mm-hmm. and this is just another. I think, you know, I want to return to this in a second, but like in retrospect, it feels like we've entered the digital era of Autechre in some ways. And so it's like, you know, in hindsight, you can be like, this is an update or something like that. But I think I would just be like, you know, this is a wild change. And yet it does kind of seem like Autechre, I don't know, jumping into the fray of some of their peers, like Autechre has entered the chat. I usually like to save, you know, context stuff for later, but I want to return to the 1997 interview that we discussed last week, and I think you alluded to it earlier. You know, in regard to Aphex Twin, Square Pusher, etc., Sean says, I think there's not enough emotion in music at the moment. There's a lot of people our age who are making music that I think is absolutely stunning technically, except for the fact that the emotion's somehow lost in the process. So, you know, the question is, did Autechre, you know, that was from 1997. They've made Chiastic Slide. They seem to be like quite out of step with the stuff that's going on with some of their peers, which is like pushing digital technology as far as it can go, like absolute hyperactivity with the drum programming and everything. And they were making like their garage rock record with Chiastic Slide. Does it feel like kind of an about face? I mean, I almost listen to this and I think it like got to them, their competitive spirit. They were like, you know what? Fuck Aphex Twin. Like, we can do this shit, you know? And then I honestly feel like by the time you get to Drug Use, that's like Richard D. James being like, I can outdo Autechre. I can make crazier drum programming than Acro Year 2, you know? Like, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked in our Peel session episode about like how, you know, Drain was released and then Aphex, you know, counters that with a how the hell is that word, Bocephus bouncing ball or whatever.
Oh yeah, Bucephalus bouncing ball.
Yeah, there you go. And then, you know, we get drain two on this one. So I mean, I do kind of wonder, like, maybe, you know, they said, we read like a quote where they said they didn't want to get into a tricks war, but you know, maybe something like that, you know, sort of like did kind of spur it, you know, a little bit, because I think you're right. I mean, this is either Sean is like completely, I think they say in England, taking the piss out of us here, right. with his comment, or yeah, I mean, they did an about face, because I mean, I think it would be hard to argue that there is a lot of emotion and you know, everything in this record here. You know, this is clearly a digital, I would even say, you know, technical kind of record.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like a deliberate jump to the cutting edge, mm-hmm. of technology. You know, I want to sort of touch on this. This is probably something that will make more sense to return to in the next couple episodes, but you know, I'm wondering, are we officially onto that new era that I was talking about, or do you feel like it's more of a transition into later Autechre? You know, we talked about how we might feel in 1998, but we got a listener email from LPF. He said, it's the perfect middle ground album, one that old heads and new heads can mostly agree on. You know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, part of me wants to say that it's we're sort of like definitively in the new era, but I think the listener is a little right. You know, it is a little transitionary, because I think he's correct that you know, old heads and new heads can mostly agree on it, and I think that speaks to why it's you know, the highest sometimes, or at least one of the highest, you know, rated on Rate Your Music, because I think it is sort of in that sweet spot. You know, they haven't gone full, you know, crazy algorithmic, you know, strictly, you know, computer kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, it's not... This is definitely a, you know, a big step from Incunabula or something, which is like, you know, very clearly, you know, hip hop based and you know, dance based and everything. So yeah, I mean, I think it is definitely a transition. You know, I mean, maybe we're a little further in the transition. You know, if it's a wave, we're you know, past the curve, you know, into the digital kind of thing. But I think the listener's right that it's sort of a transitionary.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, thinking about that quote, you know, I wonder if they felt that, like, digital and, you know, these kind of, like, cutting-edge sounds weren't that interesting necessarily. And that's why this album became more about the composition of the music, you know? And it just feels like... I don't know. That might be my hang up with it. Is that it's not embracing the possibilities of like digital sound design, and maybe they just purely did not have the confidence in making like purely digital sound design interesting and mind blowing, which they obviously get into in the next few albums. You know, get real good at that, to be honest. So here it's like, these sounds will kind of serve the song or something. And that makes it sort of accessible. That makes it somehow, I don't know, a nice middle ground for people, but it makes it to me like just less thrilling. I think people are going to think that I'm like some old head or something, but the truth is I'm like an old head and a new head and maybe less of a middle head. But you know, I'm giving it every shot here. I mean, I'm listening a million times, but, I also want to return to LPF's email for a second, though. He calls LP5 their best album of the pre-Max MSP era. You know, this is something we'll touch on a lot in coming episodes. Actually, I think we'll talk about it again when we get to EP7 in a few minutes. But we got a lot of amazing emails explaining how Max MSP works in layman's terms. Thanks so much, by the way. So based on all of that stuff, you know, I've read them like numerous times trying to wrap my head around it. Does LP5 strike you as a pre-Max MSP work? I mean, why does it feel so cutting edge compared to other electronic artists of the time? Maybe you disagree with that. If Autechre is still basically using the same gear everybody else is using.
I read through those emails with the, you know, Max MSP stuff. I wouldn't claim to say I understand it completely yet or anything.
Right.
You know, but it does sort of strike me as pre that. You know, I think like the, you know, we've talked about like the algorithmic thing they sort of get into. Like, this doesn't really feel like that yet. You know, it still
doesn't feel jammy at all, really.
No.
It's not jamming.
No, exactly. You know, it feels, you know, programmed.
Yeah,
you know,
it feels laser precise to me.
Like, it's exactly.
So meticulous.
You know, which seems, you know, that from what I understand of Max and stuff like that, that seems, you know, kind of a pre-Max MSP. I think, you know, your question, you know, why it feels so cutting edge compared to the other, you know, artists of the time is, honestly, I just think it's because... they're so much better. You know, I think they just genuinely are, you know, more creative and have taken the same, you know, sort of gear and, you know, painted a better picture with it. You know, I mean, everyone's using the same paints, you know, but, you know, some things are, you know, some people are better than others. And I think here, you know, Autechre is just frankly better than a lot of their peers at the time.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that because, and again, we'll talk about it more in upcoming episodes, I'm sure, but it's like, you know, I wonder if that's what makes it a little bit more accessible to people, a little bit friendlier to both old heads and new heads, is that it's not like a pure explosion into like the insane impossibilities of Max MSP, which, you know, from what I understand, basically is like building sounds from the absolute ground up.
Mm-hmm.
Which they're going to get real, real into, obviously. And it doesn't have that generative quality. You know, we speculated that maybe Chiastic has a touch of it. You know, some emailers speculated that as well. Sickly Sweet sounded like maybe some of that. But yeah, this sounds like not jamming all of a sudden. It sounds like absolutely precise. And it does strike me as a very interesting, like, I don't know, arms race is starting. I could not stop thinking about Drug Use by Aphex Twin as like an answer to this album or something, because there are tracks on that, like the second track, I can't remember what it's called, but you know, it sounds like an attempt to one up Acro Year 2 to me, or like some of those little player piano pieces, they sound like Melv or something. You know, like I really feel like this pissed Richard D. James off, and he was like, you know what, I can one up this. Who knows though? Let's talk about the cover art. So listener Key, once again, he said the monolithic artwork somehow suggests both indifference and foreboding. We got another email today that directed us to some, you know, really cool high-res scans of the artwork. I do want to mention that we got schooled on Twitter a little bit about the chiastic artwork, which, you know, this person was like filming the thing, and it's got like this kind of like glossy, like different, like extra shapes. You know, it looks like on a scan it just looks like pure white, but it's actually got like a lot of interesting shapes in it with this like strange gloss. So I do want to kind of note the physical presence of some of these releases, you know, going forward, lesson learned. And in LP5's case, it is very interesting because, you know, it's like that black plastic, you know, that's usually underneath the disc of a CD. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? But the whole thing is
sort of textured.
Yeah. And all you get is like just this little embossed, like their name in lowercase. But otherwise, it's like it's blanker than a blank disc. You know, what do you make of that?
I mean, I like it. You know, I think the listener is right. You know, it's got a monolithic quality to it. You know, I love like minimalist art and everything. So, I mean, you know, this is a almost as minimal as you can get. I guess it's sort of similar to Trirepite in the sense that it's really just a color, but you know, Trirepite I think just like is a color, and you know, this has that.
It's like the absence, you know, sort of color, you know.
Well, that's what black is, but you know, it, I know, it has, but you that, know what like, I mean? It's like texture.
It's just the plastic of a disc. It's
like, I get what you mean.
They didn't even bother to make a cover. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
I get you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like literally, you know, like you said, like that. You know, if anyone's old enough listening to this, it remembers, yeah, the,
right.
Like where the disc was, you know, on the CD, you know, on your standard, you know, the ones that weren't clear, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like that weird, just kind of, it's like just literally, it feels like that's the color, like that the plastic just comes out, you know, like of the machine.
Right.
You know, I don't know if that's true, but you know, it's like, that's just how it is.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways I feel, I guess I always kind of felt like it was just like a redo of the Trirepite art. And I was like, what's the deal with that? You know, like why? But then I started to overthink it, let's say. And it feels like a redo of Trirepite, but in the CD era. Like Trirepite is canonically a vinyl record. You know, that's like the incomplete without surface noise thing. Whereas LP5 is a CD. It is like through and through a CD. And this artwork, I mean, it almost feels like a, you know, a celebration of the CD. You know, it's like, because the whole thing is just that like black plastic, it just makes you think of it as a CD. And then like, you know, what do the sounds sound like? They sound like purely digital, you know, like CD only noises. You know what I mean? And I don't want to jump ahead too much, but like EP7 has a similar vibe where it's like, you know, with the hidden track and everything. It's like, do you get what I'm saying? It's like it's the new version of Incomplete Without Surface Noise is like Incomplete Without Walkman CD player.
No, I completely agree. Yeah.
And they're just like, they're obsessed with the medium. You know what I mean? Like they always are. It feels to me like, so this is like, they've been obsessed with their hardware. They've been obsessed with the machinery that makes music. They've been obsessed with the physical disc that plays music. Now they're obsessed with the CD.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And I mean, looking at Discogs, I don't own, you know, this record, but the vinyl version is like a bit different. It's not really black. It's like a cardboard, you know, kind of, it sort of just looks like a cardboard sleeve, you know, kind of thing. But again, you know, just looking at a static picture here, it might look a bit different.
Well, I'm sticking with my theory and saying that I'm putting my foot down. LP5 is a fucking CD. It is incomplete on vinyl. With surface noise, complete without surface noise.
Overly, how can you be incomplete with more thing? It would be overly complete with surface noise, I guess.
Yeah, to overdone. So philosophically, but it is a CD. Question. The art embraces the CD. The sound embraces the CD. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
It's like, okay, it's Ottecker's Yeezus over here.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah. All right, so let's move on to our favorite tracks. I always like to quiz you on what Rate Your Music if Rate Your Music is anything like consensus, what Rate Your Music thinks are the best tracks. But we've got quite a lot of bolded tracks, so here's what I'll ask you. What do you think are the unbolded tracks that are not the interlude type tracks? There's just three that are unbolded, that are not interludes.
Three? Oh, man, that are not interludes. That's really hard. I'm going to guess...
Yeah, you're never going to get this.
Yeah, I'm going to guess Fold 4, Rap 5.
That's right. That is right.
That's one of my less favorite tracks, so I went with that. I'm going to say Art Carrier. I don't really know why. I'm just kind of guessing.
No, that's a strong 4.1.
Oh, well, shows what I know. I'll go under BOAC, but I think I'm wrong.
All right, you're way off. It's Fold 4, Rap 5, you got that. It's Vos In, and it's 777.
Huh, that surprised me. I'll say Vos In. I really like that song.
Yeah, I would note that as one of my highlights, actually, Vos In. But here's my issue, is like... It's kind of like a 3-minute track. It's quite a fun, like, I don't know. It's really engaging. It's got this like nice, like, I don't know, like something like tape rolling, but it's like turning into digital static or something in the middle. But then it's got like these kind of sick, like bass synth licks going through it. And then 3.5 minutes in, it turns into like, honestly, the lowest point of the album for me, which is like just, you know, it's just playing with the time knob on delay pedals for a couple of minutes. Like it's quite wanker, you know, it's wankery. It's just like kind of lazy to me.
I'll disagree. I mean, I like a good, you know, we talked about it with that machine I bought, you know, that a listener told me about, but I love a good, just fucking with a delay knob, kind of wankery thing, I guess. I really like how the song kind of falls apart. I think it, because, you know, you talked about it a little bit, like this record is kind of accessible. And I think like the first half of Vogue, that's just like, you know, a banger, you know, like you just it like, is, I could almost dance to this or something. And then it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. We're still listening to Autechre here. So I really kind of like that little second section. I would say one of my other favorite, tracks here. I mean, obviously I've talked about it already, but I like Acro Year 2 a lot. I really like that wild, you know, percussion in it. But one we haven't really mentioned, Under BOAC. I just think that's a like really, you know, interesting track. You know, it's got this like so much like empty space in it. Those the percussion's got like this weird kind of, you know, wet sound to it.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's the most EP7 sounding thing here because it's a little bit dirty. Yeah. It's like the drums are, you know, they sound like, and this is one of those rare instances where I get a sense of like physical space because they sound like drums in a room or something. It sounds like a constant drum fill, kind of like Acro Year, but it's interesting. It's like almost plunderphonic-y because you feel like you're listening to a recording of drums that is getting like digitally destroyed in different ways. Like you hear these kind of like weird twists, like glitches and like stretched out, you know, moments. And yeah, you know, I mean, it's pretty fascinating. It's another one of these like almost mono tracks, but it kind of like rolls with it in an interesting way because you feel like you're listening to like a shitty, dirty recording being destroyed.
Yeah, it's got like sort of a, you know, a tape music kind of feel to it with that. I think that's why I think it's one of the most interesting you know, tracks here on this record. But one thing I just thought of, you know, we went back to how or you were talking about how this is like definitively a CD album. The hidden track here, you know, I mean, that was such a you know, a CD move, and in fact that hidden track is not on any of the vinyl, you know,
incomplete. What did I say? Incomplete without hidden track.
Yeah, incomplete without 12 minutes and 4 seconds of silence before right, a one-minute right. Hidden track. But yeah, I think that definitely speaks to that. I do think though that hidden track is a sort of pointless and not that great. Definitely not worth sitting through 12 minutes of silence.
It's one of the lamest like CD era tricks, but it's you know, it's kind of, I don't know, it's interesting that there's an aspect of discovery and that they are playing with the physical medium a little bit. They'll do that again with EP7. I want to touch on Ray. We've talked about it a little bit, but you know, listener Blue Shades wrote us, and a lot of listeners wrote us. Blue Shades said, Ray is my favorite Autechre track of all time. All the elements of that song just come together into such a beautiful arrangement. The rolling kick drums, the emotional synth chords, the way the hi-hats are super blown out and distorted. I just love it so much, and the slowdown is so obviously amazing. I don't even think I need to say anything about it. Listener Colin notes the AE trope of morphing and slowing down near the end, something they employed on Tear, I think we mentioned that, and Crystal. Ray is, like, I think widely considered a highlight of the Autechre canon. It's like the highest rated by far track here on Ray Your Music is a 4.5. Do you love Ray as much as everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great song. I think that really, you know, on this record, that's the track that I think speaks the most to, you know, Autechre's songwriting. Because he's right. I mean, they employ this, you know, trick of the slow down kind of thing a bit. But I think they do it in one of their best here. And like you said, those like blown out hi-hats, you know, it's like such a noisy, you know, object that they use in such like a great way in this, like, you know, really kind of like sweet and nice song to have like this, you know, wildly blown out, distorted like sound. But I don't know if it's the mixing and that, the, you know, kind of almost mono thing, like they put it in that, in the space of like the sonic spectrum where like that distorted noise, like isn't noise, you know what I mean? Like, it's
yeah it's very clean. It's very like,
yeah, they take like the dirtiest thing and make it clean, which is just, you know, such like, you know, sonic mastery.
Yeah, and fascinating, I think, that the drums are so slamming, but the mm-hmm. track overall still feels like very gentle and sweet. And then the way that it does sort of slow down and open up, it gets like even prettier. I mean, it's really breathtaking. I want to, yeah, listener Andy, he also called Ray one of the most gorgeous electronic tracks I've ever heard. But then he shouted out Cork, which, you know, I didn't get into like my favorites because I sort of already spoiled it in that I think Cork is my favorite song here. But then he dissed Arch Carrier, saying something about the chord sequences and those repetitive arpeggios prevent me from loving it. You know, Arch Carrier is an interesting track because it's almost like what could have been, I feel like. It's like more of a transitional step because of those strings and like the large role they play. It feels like, I don't know, a little bit more like Sickly Sweet style in the sense of like mixing, like very digital sound design with like sampled or recognizable sounds, things that I can at least relate to the real world. And so it's, I don't know, it's like interesting. If they just didn't take such a bold leap into the digital frontier, I feel like we'd get a record like this. Because, you know, like a lot of beautiful string work and stuff on Tri-Repete, mm-hmm. mixing with those mechanical sounds, there's just like not really an interest here in mixing, you know, sounds from different worlds together. And then it's amazing because the strings drop out halfway through and are not replaced. We're just purely in a computer again.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like, you know, it is the closest thing to like a bridge between something like Sickly Sweet and, you know, this new era, you know, if that's what we're calling it. But I really like Arc Carrier. I think those arpeggios are really kind of cool, you know. Like, I mean, it almost is another, you know, sort of a dancey kind of track. I think this is like really accessible Autechre song. You know, I mean, I think those strings and everything help that. I guess I can see, yeah, I mean, it's pretty long and you know, fairly repetitive, you know, for its length. I mean, besides like the strings dropping out, but like you said, they're not really replaced and stuff, so I can see why, you know, somebody would say it's repetitive and maybe not like it. But I honestly, myself, I like the song a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it's stunning. I do think it's very accessible. In fact, I caught my girlfriend nodding her head to it. And she would be ashamed of that because she proclaims to hate Autechre, but I think she likes it. I want to move on to some of the weak points here. You know, we haven't talked much about Drain 2 itself. And for me, I find this a little underwhelming. I think it's like, you know, I know it's sort of a fan favorite, but it's a little bit of like the, I don't know, weakest closing track that Autechre had released up to this point. And they have like nailed the closing track every time. My opinion is that, you know, I kept thinking about the track Nguyen, the last track on Chiastic Slide, and the way that it is like a fully formed piece that like slowly disintegrates, you know, it just turns into like nothing. And if you feel like it's almost going to, you know, come back together in a nice, you know, crescendo, a lesser artist would do that typical trick, but yeah. It just keeps falling apart and just becomes nothing and just glitchy mess. And this track, it kind of starts in that territory. It sounds like, I don't know, atomic particles bouncing around. You know, it's using that exponential delay trick that you mentioned started a little tricks war from Autechre's Drain to Aphex's Bucephalus bouncing ball back to Drain 2 now. But it's just clattering noisiness. It sounds at points like it's going to coalesce into something. It never does. And I just kept thinking, this is like if all we got was the last half of Nguyen.
Yeah, I agree. I Drain 2 is one of the lower points, I think, on the record for me. You know, I don't want to get in trouble for saying that, but I in complete general, I'm a much bigger Autechre fan than Aphex. But I think like he sort of won. I think Bucephalus Bouncing Ball is a better song than Drain 2. I think it sort of uses the trick a little
better. I think Drain is a way better song than Drain.
I agree. It just sort of like it doesn't have that big end, you know, or anything that you're right, like every other Autechre record, you know, at least up to this point, and I think, you know, off the top of my head, you know, at least a great deal of the future ones, you know, will have. So that is like, you know, the closest thing I think to a letdown, as I'll find on this record.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a bit of a letdown. And then I will say, we got to talk about these interlude tracks. You said you kind of like them, which I'm fascinated by. But, you know, listener Key, he also likes them. He wrote to say, Melv takes us out to revel in its own synthetic ersatz glory for a brief moment. Caliper Remote is heading into music concrete territory and starts to foreshadow the next album. But I know you guys hate doing that. Yeah, we usually do. Listener Colin says, Melv is one of the more hopeful and cheery songs they've ever done. The little flourish at the end always gives me a smile. I mean, I get it. I sort of agree with that. I do think we need a pause there. But to me, these are like so insubstantial. There's just nothing to them. And I'm just like, why are they even there?
I don't know. I think they, you know, as little pauses, I think they work perfectly. You know, Melv is like, I think a pretty, you know, nice and sweet little song on its own. You know, even if you took it without being a interlude kind of thing. You know, Caliper Remote, yeah, it's got the music concrete thing, you know, going on. And I, you know, we're not supposed to speak ahead, you know, when we do these reviews, but, you know, it is like sort of the little, I feel like on each Autechre record, you know, when we listen to it, there's always like one little song or section or something that looks backwards. You know, here we sort of determined it's you know, Art Carrier, and I think there's always like something that, you know, looks forward a little bit. And I think Caliper Remote is kind of that moment here, you know. So I think it's fine, you know. I think you know, Caliper Remote, minute 40, you know, it's just like, if nothing else, it's just a little breath of air, you know, before, you know, getting into the closing, you know, section of the record. I think they're fine. I have no problem with them. I like them, you know, in general.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that they're a little bit of a missed opportunity. They're a little bit like nothing there. I mean, they've gotten so good, I think, in the last couple of records of like, you know, there'll be interlude tracks, but you almost don't even want to call them interlude tracks because they're just as interesting as the main tracks. So like we talked about Redic AC on Chiastic Slide, like objectively kind of an interlude, but it's so fascinating, like such a fascinating sound world. I just don't have much to say about either of these tracks. And, you know, we're already running a little longer than I wanted to, so I want to kind of like shift into our final thoughts. But like Blue Shades, when he called LP5 banger after banger, he added, it has the best track-to-track sequencing of any of their albums, in my opinion. You know, for me, I just keep getting hung up on like, I do agree that it's like banger after banger, and I love like every track here in a way, but then it's like that peripheral stuff that I think is sort of weak. So it's like the interludes I think are pointless. I don't know why we get like an interlude with Melv and then Vos In ends with an interlude of just like wankery with the delay knobs, you know, and like then Drain 2, I mean, it's an interesting track, but it's sort of like the album ends on what I think is like almost the weakest note here. And it just makes for like a package that is like, I don't know, something like a greatest hits album where it's like awesome tracks, but as an album, I'm just, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't hit me as hard. And then I also mentioned like the lack of sound design. I mean, like beautiful compositions here, but you know, I'm looking for that sound design, you know? So how would you start to like sum up your thoughts here?
I think you're kind of right on the greatest hits, you know, sort of feel. Because, you know, this, at least of the records so far, you know, this one sort of does kind of have the, like, the most sequencing doesn't matter kind of thing. I think you really could, like, kind of shuffle this record and it wouldn't change much of it. In fact, you know, you talked about, like, how you feel like Aphex's, like, drug use is sort of like, you know, an answer to this record. You know, it has those, like, little piano interludes and everything, which remind you of Melv and stuff. And Drug Use is, like, famously a, like, really, that record is, like, shuffled. And
scattershot.
Yeah, it, like, has nothing, you know, no sequencing, you know, was really thought of it at all, you know. I feel like Autechre has at least put, you know, more in that. You know, I feel like the, you know, Caliper Remote and Melv are in better places than any of the sort of interludes on Drug Use or anything. But you're right, you know, I mean, Drain 2, I think, is at least so far, you know, kind of the weakest, you know, closing track, you know, on a record here. I sort of mentioned it at top. I don't think Acro Year is like the greatest opener. You know, I think it's a little scary maybe for people who aren't you know, accustomed. But also I kind of like that, you know, we start like so frantic with Acro Year. 777's, you know, got a little bit of it. You know, Ray, you know, has got some movement. Vos is kind of, you know, dancey and stuff. And I feel like we slowly kind of get less and less, you know, frantic and slow down a bit. And the sequencing and the sequencing in that respect is pretty good, but it's not 100%, you know, true. I mean, I think there's moments that come back that are, you know, speeding up again and stuff, you know. I don't think this is the best sequenced, or, you know, maybe even not the most cohesive you know, record.
I mean, I don't know, high highs for sure, but I just feel like as a piece, not as strong. And we'll get into our rankings a little later, but do you have any kind of final thoughts on LP5, or are we ready to move on to EP7?
No, I think we've gone over what both of us guessed we would before we started recording, so we should probably move on.
All right.
Autechre released EP7 again with Warp Records in the UK and Nothing Records here in the US about a year after LP5 on June 7th, 1999. The vinyl release, however, was split into two parts entitled EP7.1 and EP7.2, which also explains why it's split across two discs of the EP's box set, according to Rob. At 70 minutes, including the hidden bonus track we'll talk about in a minute, EP7 is about as long as each of Autechre's previous albums. But Sean said that, quote, "We deliberately called it an EP so we could do things that weren't album-like."
Yeah, critical reception was somewhat mixed. AllMusic says it's not quite as futuristic or as distinctive as LP5, but a bit more fun to listen to, while Pitchfork claims it offers very little in the way of originality and, quote, "just seems to wander around aimlessly, alternating between prime Autechre cuts and uninspired filler." Wow. Scaruffi was even harsher, calling it another minor work which confirms a period of crisis. Fans, though, seem to love EP7. It's got a 3.63 on Rate Your Music, making it one of Autechre's highest-rated releases, period, and the second-highest-rated EP after Garbage. So I wonder how much time, Dan, have you spent with EP7?
I've listened to it quite a bit. It's one I like. You know, it's such like a... I guess I don't want to jump too far ahead, but it's such like a companion to LP5, which is a record I love. So I've spent quite a bit of time with it in the past.
Yeah, I listen to it pretty often, but I feel like I've never felt like it fully clicked with me. And actually, I've always been a little bit perplexed about the relationship between LP5 and EP7, because I feel like they sound pretty different, which I guess we should just transition right into. But yeah, this is the first time that I was like, you know, listening to LP5, EP7, LP5, EP7, and like trying to think of them together, which, you know, was interesting. So how would you describe the overall sound of EP7?
I mean, you know, in the context of LP5, I'm going to go ahead and break the rule right away about jumping forward. But, you know, like yeah. with Sign and Plus, you know, we talked about how like they sound very different, but they're like cut from the same, you know, kind of cloth. And I feel that that's kind of what we have here with LP5 and EP7. You know, in retrospect, after Sign and Plus, you know, it really kind of reminds me of that. You know, they don't. Exactly. Like none of the songs really from EP7 would I move over to LP5 or vice versa. But they do sort of seem like they're made with, you know, I don't know, the same equipment, similar software, you know, maybe similar setup kind of things. You know, so it's sort of like cut from the same cloth as LP5, I think is how I would say. You know, I feel like maybe you don't agree with that. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's, you know, it's much dirtier. It's much grittier. It, you know, it just doesn't have that like kind of high def, hyper clean sound of LP5.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, when I listen to this record, it's like, it sounds like what I would have imagined Chiastic Slide to sound like if I just read about Chiastic Slide, which is like, if you're using a lot of, you know, bit crushing and digital distortion and glitching and, you know, just lowering the bit rate of things, you know, I would expect it to sound like a dirty digital mess or something. And Chiastic Slide, we were like kind of struck by like, why does it sound like total hardware, like sounds in the real mm-hmm. world and stuff. And so this is like very digital, but very, very dirty in a digital way, you know. That to me seems like the polar opposite of LP5, which is all about like those clean lines, like I was saying.
I get you. To go back to my Sign Plus analogy, you know, I kind of feel like they were a similar, you know, sort of way. It's like taking the same, you know, palette, but like looking at it in a different way. Because you're right, you know, the stark difference here between EP7 and LP5 is, you know, LP5 is this clean, you know, shiny, shimmery, you know, sort of record, and EP7, it's not really distortion. It's digital distortion. I mean, bit crushing is all over this record. You know, it's definitely like the bit crushed album, but yeah. It sort of just feels like it's like they took the like, you know, machinery of LP5, but then, you know, distorted it, destroyed it, you know, or something, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
with
yeah.
with these sort of, you know, sounds. I think that's like, you know, my feeling in it, you know, the same way with Sign and Plus, you know, like Sign is this much more like, you know, ambient kind of thing. And then Plus is like this, you know, distortion of that and everything. That's how I feel about it, you know?
Yeah. Wow. You're breaking the rule all over. We got an email.
Actually, yeah, no, I'll stop.
We got an email from somebody who was like, what is the rule you keep talking about? And so I'll just repeat it for everybody, which is like, we usually like to talk about records and not, I think it's lazy sort of to be like, this sounds like later Autechre, or you can hear hints of later Autechre. So we try to pretend like it's the year that the album came out. So, you know, points deducted from you. Okay.
Well, in my defense, I'm not talking about the sound. I'm talking about the relationship between the records. Yeah. So I think it's okay. I'm going to allow it for myself.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, just, you know, a couple other thoughts I had about the overall sound of this record. It is like, yeah, I mean, it's quite noisy. It's like a lot of like digital noise. I mean, just everything. I feel like also this record is kind of like, I don't know, dank and wet as a record. I think about like, there's something like dubby, you know, like those water drip sounds mm-hmm. about RPEG. There's something like, you know, on, God, which track is it? I think it's Zeiss Contra-Rex. Like the hi-hat is like a drip. It's like drip, 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 drip. And it just like, I don't know, it just sounds like a wet, dark basement, sort of similar to Chiastic Slide, but made in a fully digital realm or something like that. I did want to note, you know, if this track like Lick Flea, or however you pronounce that, I feel like this track is almost fucking with me personally, somebody who doesn't understand the relationship between these two records, because it starts out, I think, in fully LP5 territory. It almost even sounds like Acro Year a little bit. And then it gets mm-hmm. more and more fucked up as it goes along. It becomes an EP7 track about halfway through, just like total noise. I feel like actually a lot of these songs, even ones that start out very fucked up, the whole trajectory of them is to get more fucked up as it goes along. Like, you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but like this, you know, this CD bonus track where you have to rewind from the first song, you know, it just sounds like digital Like, it sounds like you broke your CD player, basically. And the whole record, I would feel like, did I do permanent damage to my CD player? Because it doesn't seem like it's working right.
Yeah, I mean, what I think we read that email in the bonus episode where the guy said his headphones were broken or something, and he was right.
This sounds like that.
Yeah, it really kind of does. You're right. You know, I mean, I really love Lick Flea or whatever because of that. You know, it really does like start out like that LP5, you know, kind of thing, and then it just like. That's sort of like how I think of this whole record, you know. It's the flavor of LP5 and then just like completely, you know, destroyed.
So I mean, in that sense, I guess I understand the relationship, in that I feel like LP5 is something like, it's really focused on the medium of the CD, and this is even more so because it's like the sound of a CD player like malfunctioning basically the whole time. Which is fascinating and striking for sure. I want to read an email from listener Eric, who says, it's difficult to tell when Autechre started using Macs since it doesn't really have a sound of its own. The sound of Macs is just the sound of whatever you've built in it. But I believe EP7/Confield was when they really delved into using it to generate sequences algorithmically. You know, we talked about how LP5 sounds really just laser precise. But when you listen to this, do you hear that kind of like something like generative sound, something like play with building sounds from the ground up that you can do in Max MSP?
You know, EP7 does like feel, it feels like a, you know, a looser version of LP5 with more like, you know, some jammy sort of aspects. You know, I don't think they're fully you know, there yet, but you know, from the little bit I've understood of Max MSP so far, like I wouldn't be surprised if you know, it was starting to be used here. I don't think, you know, it's like entirely made there or anything, but I could see the you know, the beginnings of it are there, maybe.
Yeah, you know, and I wanted to read from Blue Shade's email again. He says, when someone creates a really complex interactive patch, people describe it as alive or an ecosystem. Everything has this living, breathing feeling to it when it's all working together as small parts of a bigger patch that creates something musical. You know, I do have a hard time hearing that in LP5 because it does sound so deliberate and meticulous. But here I do feel that for sure, because it just feels like,
yeah, it does have an alive.
Things are getting like tinkered with and fucked with and just like destroyed, and it does sound like it's never, you know, there like no loops, like it's always just like sort of shifting and evolving. Even if the tracks themselves, like compositionally, are not that complex, usually they are like, you know, just the sound design of it is really, really getting played with. I also want to note, you know, there was this Fact magazine article on some of Autechre's gear, and it claims that MapHive 6.1 was made entirely on the Roland PMA5 personal music assistant. It looks like this really shitty 90s BlackBerry or something. And that is really interesting to me. You know, MapHive does have this kind of like, I don't know, almost Super Nintendo-y sound, like at least in the beginning. And then it sounds like sampled stand-up bass or something, like all of a sudden gets into like sort of an acoustic realm with like, you know, these kind of hissy, wispy hi-hats that sound like brushes or something. I mean, it's like quite proggy and just crazy. But, you know, does that kind of change the way you think about the record at all? Like if they, you know, if they're playing with, they're experimenting with Max MSP, they're throwing a song on here that was made entirely on like a little BlackBerry type thing, you know, does it make you think like these are little experiments, like little one-offs, just LP5 leftovers, or like a genuine attempt to move into a new direction? You know, I'm wondering, what the hell did Sean mean when he said they wanted to, quote, do things that weren't album-like?
I think yeah, it's maybe a combination of those things, but I think the experiment, which I think in turn moves things forward, you know, you're allowed that a bit more on EP, you know? I think that people like Map 5 6.1 a lot, so I might get in trouble, but I really hate that like marching Super Nintendo you know,
interesting
bit at the beginning. It really is just sort of annoying. It reminds me of what is that like chiptune music or something, which I can't stand. But you know, and it's weird. There was a thread I saw in the Odd Tekker subreddit where somebody asked about, you know, if that was like sampling a Nintendo song, and I found this article, you know, from that that subreddit, and I had read this article a couple years ago, and I actually have like a sample pack from that PMA 5 that I downloaded after reading that, and it's just I've not found any use for it. It's no sounds that I would really use, but yeah, I don't know. It's a shame because I really dislike the first half of that song, but then when it morphs, you know, again with this like living, breathing kind of aspect, the song like really kind of completely morphs into something else, and I really love that part of it. So it's simultaneously my least and one of my favorite moments on the record.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of a brilliant song. I like the beginning. I think it's like bizarre, like this weird Super Nintendo timpani loop or something. And then the way it like shifts, like these like really big synth chords come in, and then it like it makes this beautiful transition into the strangest like jazz prog thing. And then it even shifts again into like more of a hip hop territory with like what I think are like 909 kicks and stuff, like almost a little retro in vibe. I mean, but the thing is, the track feels like it almost doesn't fit on the record, and it, you know, because it does almost get into that, like, you know, I sort of think of Aphex Twins like computer controlled acoustic instruments, you know, in the sense of like the stand up bass and stuff. And the whole rest of the record has felt so digital, so divorced from physical space and everything, and just like all about digital noise and distortion. Learning that this was a track made on just like this one piece of almost novelty equipment, it does make me think, okay, so what Sean wanted to do is make, you know, he wanted to put out a record without thinking so hard about it. They have these cool tracks, these cool one-offs they do, and they didn't want to, because say what you want about like the LSEC NTS era, for the most part, Odd Tekker is like obsessed, I think, with making a perfect record that like flows wonderfully, and they put so much effort, I think, into it. And here, it was like, you know what, we just want to put something out, we'll call it an EP so there's less pressure on that. And yet, I think they almost couldn't help themselves in making it sound sort of similar and making it like flow sort of nicely. You know what I mean? I mean, that's sort of my theory, is like they wanted to free themselves and then couldn't resist making it like a proper package in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's respectable. You know, I think naming an EP, you give yourself, you know, a little bit of freedom and whatnot. But I mean, that doesn't mean take that freedom to the extreme and just make a complete mishmash or something. You know, I think what they did, you know, like, I think it would be hard to like fit something like Mat 5 into an album, because, you know, you're not going to make a whole album on that, you know, novelty machine, and you know, those chiptune kind of sounding drums, I feel like would be hard pressed to fit, like, you know, cohesively in a whole record. Yeah. So it's like, you know, you can get away with it on an EP. You know, I said it's like one of my least favorite sections on the record. But you know, I would bitch a lot more about it if this was LP5, you know, if that was stuck in LP5 or something, you know. Yeah. I think it would stick out, you know, much more like a sore thumb than it does on an EP. I don't know if that, you know, is that just a psychological thing, you know, like, I don't know, but I think that's how, you know, most people don't look at EP, you know, if you're just a passing fan of a band, you know, like you like Tri Repete, you like a couple other records, you know, maybe you'll check out when they release a new album, you know, but I think like the EPs are for like the fans, you know, kind of thing.
Lowers the expectations a little bit and lets you play a little bit more.
Yeah, for basically every band, you know, in kind of every genre, you know, a rock EP, I think is the same, you know, sort of thing.
But the question though is like, do you think that this feels cohesive like a record? Does it flow like a record, or does it feel like a hodgepodge of interesting experiments?
No, I think it definitely like it has a flow to it. I think, you know, like you said, they're just so good that they can't like help but do it. You know, I think there's maybe moments that are a little hodgepodgey, like I said, but I think overall, like, it has a sound. It it feels like an album, you know, kind of thing. So I would say that it is sort of cohesive, yeah.
So, you know, listener Joe from Latvia, pretty cool, says he got turned onto this album via Radiohead's Amnesiac. He's not exactly comparing the two, but do you think that's a decent comparison? You know, we got another email from Andy who says, I personally prefer EP7 to LP5 when it comes to listening to each album front to back. For me, LP5 has higher highs, but EP7 is more consistent. Joe says it's inconceivable for me to imagine that these are some kind of leftovers from LP5. Not only is the style of composition and even much of the sound palette completely different, but it flows together better than almost any of their other albums. You know, I couldn't help thinking about that Amnesiac comparison, honestly, because it's like, you know, leftovers from the sessions, but just as good as the stuff from the sessions, even if it's not the same palette.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very fair comparison. Funny too, because I didn't read that email before, and you know, I talked about Kid A with LP5, but yeah, I think that's a completely fair comparison. You know, Amnesiac is leftovers or whatever from those sessions. But yeah, I think it like completely, you know, kind of stands on its own as a record. I mean, they call that an LP, right? Yeah,
Amnesiac, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But
you know, I mean, Atticar, I guess, you know, went the EP route, which is a little bit of taking the easy route, I guess. But I think that's,
I mean, it changes the context, it lowers the expectations a little bit, it does free them up to get a little bit more experimental, a little bit more creative, and I do feel like pretty soon they're gonna like not give a shit about that at all and just like, you know, go for it. But it does feel more bracing, like more difficult, more challenging, harder to make sense of. But I you know, there are people who prefer Amnesiac to Kid A because they love that like kind of freewheel and like all over the place quality of it. And I feel like that's the same vibe I get from like the big fans of EP7. You know, Joe also says that, quote, EP7 sounds like it's essentially Sean and Rob having as much fun as they've ever had making music and experiencing sheer joy exploring all of the amazing new possibilities of their software. You know, I sort of agree with this, that they're freed up to play like that. And yet I don't think it makes for like any less serious of an album, because they have pieced it together in like a smart way. But it just does have that like sort of freewheeling spirit that I think is pretty cool. I want to get to another listener email. Again, we got a lot from Mike. And this is kind of what you were getting at, actually. He wrote us with a long Sign theory. We'll talk about that in more detail in our next listener email episode. But he says, Sign is the cohesive album proper, and Plus is the more EP/collective. And they have played around with this aspect throughout their careers. He cites LP5 and EP7 as an example, quote, where both have a similar sound, but LP5 is definitely more cohesive and flows better as an album. EP7 sounds like one of those sorts of menageries or track collections from a post LP5 rig. Don't get me wrong, I love both pieces of music. So it's an interesting question, because actually, if you think about it, if you think about like Sign of Plus, if you think about like Oversteps and Move of 10, or, you know, lots of different examples, is this like almost the first time that Autechre is doing that kind of thing that will become one of their hallmarks, where it's like they release an LP and then they release some kind of companion that's like the weird offshoots of like what it could have been, or different directions or experiments or whatever?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, the EPs we've talked about previously, you know, Garbage, Anvil Vapor, you know, and stuff, are quite different. I mean, I think even the, you know, Sickly Sweet and Chiastic are closer than some of these other ones, but I think it's still you know, a little different. I think here, especially, you know, I know they didn't originally call it LP5, but, you know, I mean, it came to be known as that and everything. I think even those titles sort of, you know, add something to it and everything. So, yeah, I think this is really kind of the time they begin that hallmark. I think that speaks to, like, what we were saying, too, this transition to, like, a new era. You know, we're in that era of Autechre now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, to break the rule, I think that by the time we get to like LSEC and NTS, they're just including that stuff in the original package. But exactly. It is nice to have like the two sides. So I want to talk about your favorite tracks, but first let me quiz you. There are three bolded tracks on Rate Your Music. What do you think they are?
I think Map 5 is probably bolded.
Yep, got it.
All right. Man, I don't know. Output?
Nope.
Nope. Ah, damn. Lick Flea?
Nope. Wow, you're way off.
Yeah, I fucking suck at this.
RPEG, Map Hive, and Peer. the last track.
All right.
I wonder, what are your favorite tracks here?
My favorite, I really like Lick Flea. You know, we already talked about it. But I also, I like C-Sec a lot. You know, I've complained in the past about like the vocal samples and stuff that are not really my favorite thing. But I think they use it like so well here. You know, it's like it's such this weird. It's like you know, someone rapping or something. But the way they chop it, it's like you literally. It's like you could tell it's English, but you cannot figure out like a word they say at all. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's like the coolest use of that, you know, of the vocal sample. I think that they've done thus far. So I really like that song.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating with like the absolutely garbled like rapping is like so insane. And it also has like a really weird like lopsided feel. Like I would swear that this is not in 4/4, even though it actually is. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't know, it's such a like twisted take on hip hop. But do you think it like sort of adds to the, you know, I don't know, some people complain about this, but some people love it, as we've talked about, but like, is it almost like a novelty track? Because it's like weird that it's just here on its own. It's like a weird experiment with chopping up hip hop, you know, vocals. And it's just sitting here on its own, sort of, and they don't really do that often anyway. You know what I mean? Does it make you feel like it like pushes me slightly more into the column of like, okay, EP7 is a bunch of interesting one-offs that didn't have a home?
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I mean, that there's definitely like, you know, marks of that on this record. And C-Sec is one of those, because you're right, you know, we haven't used the vocal sample, but it's almost like in these you know, packages we get, you know, an album, an EP or two, it's always like they sort of do the vocal thing one time, you know, at least so far, and this is the one time. And I think if you look backwards, it makes it fit more that there's sort of frequently just one time that they do it, you know, on a record.
That is true. Yeah. I'll say that my favorite track here is Zeiss Contrex, however you pronounce that. I think it's a camera or something, but this track is insane to me. It is like, it is absolutely brilliant because it's got like this weird, slow, drippy thud of a beat. And there's just like glitching and staticking and like radio interference. And it all starts to kind of like coalesce and like take form. Like, I love how like the static, like it starts to get like stretched and like clipped into like a rhythmic kind of way. And it like adds to the overall track. You know, what was once just noise is now like totally musical. And then by the end, you know, you get like a pretty beautiful actual like chord melody, and you don't even remember how it emerged from the like absolute mess that this is. And then it ends with another, you could call it a novelty type of a thing, but like these weird, I don't know, French human vocals.
Oh yeah, or something. Yeah.
Totally bizarre, but it sounds like a weird radio transmission that has just bled into the song. This track feels to me like if you just had like a weird recording studio set up, and then it rained and like everything got wet in there, and then it just all started malfunctioning and it made a track on its own. Like,
yeah,
but mind blowing.
No, I love that track as well. I mean, like you said, that trick of like taking the static and, you know, most people, I feel like, take a noise or a sound and they distort it, but they're like going the opposite way. You know, it's like undistorting something. Yeah. Which is crazy, because you're right. You know, it like, I mean, it's literally just like a static noise, but it becomes percussion or rhythm, you know, and it's really nuts. And then, yeah, you're right. That like, you know, very quick, like, The French, I think it's almost like the first time you listen, it's like, did I actually hear that? You know, like, is that you know, when you're listening in headphones, it's like, is somebody else playing music that's bleeding into my own ears, you know, kind of thing. It's really neat. Yeah.
Yeah. It does make it again, it gives me a feeling of like thinking about the medium a little bit, but it does sort of stand out because there are a lot of tracks, like I mentioned, that their whole trajectory is to get more fucked up as it goes along. You know, the opposite of Zeiss Contrex, like Lick Flea, we mentioned, you know, like RPEG, it's quite like a sort of a banger. And then it gets like more and more repetitive and like noisy and weird toward the end. You know, it's just like, I don't know. It's an interesting reversal of the trick. I want to highlight a couple emails that we got. You know, Andy notes the brilliant vocal sampling on C-Sec and says it has one of their weirdly sexiest beats, too. But he also calls MapHive and Peer two of his favorite AE tracks ever. Joe calls Squeller and Output two of his favorites, but says Peer is not only, I think, the most all-around beautiful and emotionally gut-wrenching song they've ever composed, but one of the most beautiful songs ever written by any artist. Yeah, high praise. You know, I love Pure. I think it's like it's another thing where it kind of like plays with your expectations, because this record has been so noisy and digitized and emotionless, and then all of a sudden Pure just like opens up with this, you know, one of these classic like beautiful toy box kind of lullaby melodies, and yet it's like covered with a sound I don't know how to describe other than like car doors being opened and closed like different speeds all over it. What do you make of Pure as a closer here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great closer. You're right. It's like got this, you know, kind of, you know, beautiful melody, and then yeah, the percussion is very hard to describe. You know, it's almost like crunchy, or I don't know, car doors, or I think is a good description. I don't know, I love it as a closer. I think it works better as a closer than you know, Drain 2 did on LP5.
I agree, yeah, and it's short and sweet, but I just feel like it's such a cathartic release, because almost the whole record up to this point, I could imagine malfunctioning equipment made it on its own, like I was saying about Zeiss Contra Rex, and then all of a sudden this sounds so distinctly human. I mean, it is like, you know, it stays weird, it stays like broken and strange, you know, the melody is not like totally straightforward, like something Boards of Canada would make, but it's like that beautiful and then that fucked up still in some way. What do you think are the weak points on this record? You know, there's kind of a consistent ranking other than the untitled first track, which is the lowest here. But other than that one, what do you think is the one lowest track on Radio Music?
Oh, man. Maybe Output?
Nope, it's C-Sec, which I think is insane. But yeah. What are your least favorite parts of this record?
Well, I basically already said it, but, you know, MapHive 6.1, it's a shame. I love the second part of the song, like, a lot. You know, it's one of my high points on the record, but those Nintendo sounds are just really kind of awful. I really dislike them. I think that's by far my lowest point here. So much so that it's really hard to pick another one.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I don't really mind it, and I think the track more than makes up for it, but I will say that there are a couple songs here that do feel like sketches, you know, that just like weren't, they didn't have a home and they weren't ever gonna, so they just kind of like took this little sketch of an idea, fucked it up over the course of 4 minutes, and then that's all it is. You know, like Squeller, I feel like is barely memorable to me. Netlon Sentinel is another low light for me, where it's just like a chaotic mess, and it just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't really do anything. You know, I'll note that Joe, he admits that Lickflea and Netlon Sentinel don't work so well on their own, though he thinks they serve important transitional purposes. I don't know, what do you make of that? Do you think, like, I mean, do you agree with me on Netlon Sentinel? I feel like you go from the high of Zeiss Contra X to, you know, maybe the weakest part of the record, back to like the highest of highs with Peer. But do you feel like even some of the weaker tracks are transitioning us? Because there are no interludes on this record at all, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's again, you get away with it a little bit using the EP, you know, kind of distinction, you know, that it's okay that, you know, maybe they, you know, don't transition as well or anything. I don't mind Netlon Sentinel. You know, it's kind of like noisy. It's pretty cool and stuff. So yeah, I don't really mind it.
Yeah. We sort of already talked about this hidden track zero. It's not a very interesting song, you know, it's kind of just like, God, what's the term I'm searching for? Acousto-electric, you know what I'm talking about, whatever the hell that term is.
Electroacoustic, yeah.
Electroacoustic, that's what was wrong with me? But
just said it backwards.
It's just noise, it's just like drone, it's just like almost music concrete territory. But yet it serves like a very interesting purpose, like I talked about, in the sense that it like you feel like you fucked up your CD player by rewinding back from zero. Like, you weren't supposed to do that, and then you did it, and now none of the tracks sound right. Everything is fucked up and destroyed. I think that's awesome. It's another CD era trick, less common than the silence that follows Drain 2, but do you think it's corny, or do you think it's cool like I do?
I mean, you know, it's another one of those CD era tricks. At least it, I like it better than the silence thing, because, you know, especially, you know, remember on an old CD player, you know, skipping the silence, you had to like hold the fast forward button. You know, it's not like Spotify now where you can just like click the little, you know, touch screen, your cursor forward. It was much more of a pain in the ass. You know, the pre-gap thing is much more uncommon. I was thinking of, like, I know Dandelion Gum by Black Moth Super Rainbow has one. That was the only record I could think of off the top of my head that I know of with a pre-gap.
I think I organically kind of discovered it on, there's an AFI record, December something.
December Underground.
Yeah. And I was just like,
not that I would know that.
I don't know even why I tried. Maybe I just heard hearsay, but, you know, so I was sort of like familiar with this trick before listening to EP7. So it's not like mind blowing, but I don't know. I feel like 1999 is early enough that there might've been people that like accidentally discovered it. And I feel like that would blow my fucking
mind.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool. If you fucked up and found it, you know. Yeah, that would
yeah,
that would be pretty crazy.
Yeah. Okay, so we should mention on that note sort of the artwork. It's apparently designed with a circuit board designer, and Warp created a website with a fractal generator that would create new artwork similar to that featured throughout the liner notes. You know, I think it's sort of interesting because it looks to me like something like a cracked CD case or something, which again makes me think about like this new interest in the medium of the CD, and that hidden track totally adds to that, and the digital fucked upness of this whole record totally adds to that. I mean, I think it's brilliant. I did also want to highlight like the physical edition of this. It has sort of like a, I don't think in the US, but in the UK, it has sort of like a frosted case with like an embossed, you know, their name on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just looks really cool. Do you have any thoughts on the album art here?
Yeah, I like it. You know, it's really cool. I think you know, like you said, the cracked, you know, kind of case sort of thing, like, looks like it. I mean, we sort of you know, discussed that this is kind of the bridge into getting into that like generative Autechre, and you know, what's more that than having like generative you know, artwork kind of thing. So I think it really matches, and yeah, I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, I do want to note that I didn't realize that. I guess like the Designers Republic did not do either LP5 or EP7. Somebody on Reddit confidently told me that Autechre did it themselves, but from, you know, which is like the most obvious option. But from what I could like find, it's just uncredited. Like nobody really knows. I mean, maybe you don't have to be a genius to make these two arts, but it seems like Autechre did them. So I just thought it was interesting to know. So let's kind of move on to wrapping up with your overall impressions of EP7.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this EP. I think it's one of the best ones. I think it probably is the best one we've gotten to so far. You know, it's, you know, it was for playing with the rules and letting you know, you get away with a couple extra things. I think overall it's like pretty cohesive. I don't think I would complain too much if they just straight up, you know, called it an album or anything. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I feel like slightly mixed. I feel like this weird paradox in the sense of there aren't a lot of memorable tracks here. Like, you know, not a lot of tracks that I would put on like the, you know, Mount Rushmore of Autechre or come even close. But like as a whole, the record is very memorable, like,
I get,
you know, just
that,
as a thing. So it's like I love it for that, but then I also feel like just a little underwhelmed when I'm like actually listening to it. I don't know, it's slightly paradoxical. Listener Andy, he wonders, it's kind of crazy how LP5 has almost 5,000 ratings on Rate Your Music, but EP7 has just over 1,400. Maybe calling it an EP led people not to take it as seriously. I mean, I think we sort of got into that, you know, and that might have been why they called it an EP to begin with. But do you think that like EP7 should be counted among Autechre's best releases? Is it an essential Autechre release, or is it a true EP in the sense of like fans are going to love these weird experiments?
No, I think, you know, I think it deserves to be listened to, you know, just by anyone who likes Autechre. You know, it shouldn't be a starting point or anything. But I think it, I think it deserves to be, you know, a little higher held than an EP, you know, like an LP light or something, you know, if that's possible, yeah. Kind of, you know, I think it definitely deserves more than, you know, the 1400 reviews that it has.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like maybe that was by design and that makes it sort of interesting, but it does feel like a sort of essential EP. You got to hear it. But I feel like if you are a new head a little bit and you like that crazy just smattering of like, mm-hmm. everything that they came up with, and it's like you got to check this out, especially listen to it along with LP5, because you can hear like directions they could have gone or like things they could have done or things that never would have fit anywhere that are just absolutely fascinating. I think we're ready to wrap it up, but we got to talk quickly about where these new entries landed on our running, you know, lists. I want to sort of change it up here because it's going to get insanely long the farther along we go. From now on, I think we'll just talk about where the new albums landed and count down our top 10. So where did you end up putting LP5 and EP7?
All right. Yeah. Well, LP5, I put it number 3 on my list.
Interesting.
And then I put EP7 at number 5 on my list. So you want me to go ahead and give the 10?
Yeah. What's your top 10?
10, Anvil Vapor, In Vain, Sickly Sweet, Garbage, Incunabula, EP7, Amber, LP5, Chiastic Slide, and then Tri-Repete at number 1.
Wow. Well, this is where I'm going to get in trouble. This is kind of a hot take, but I put LP5 at number 5, and it is just below Sickly Sweet, which I seriously like more than LP5, I think. I feel like it's just... this is not shitting on LP5. I just feel like Sickly Sweet is... like blew my mind. It is like such a lovely combination of the LP5 EP7 composition style, but with like the sounds and incredible textures of Chiastic Slide. EP7, I slotted even more offensively lower under Incunabula at number 8 for me. Again, it's like memorable as a thing, but it's just like the individual tracks, you know, not much like really jumps out at me. We didn't talk about a lot of tracks here, like Output, you know, like Left Blank, like Drop, you know, like these are songs that like I look at them and I'm like, yeah, those are cool songs, but it's just like I don't think I'm going to be thinking about them every day of my life.
I agree. Yeah, I think the whole is you know, maybe better than the parts, because you're right, it is like you know, even, you know, when you ask, you know, my favorite songs, it is hard. I had to, you know, kind of, I don't take great notes, so I like you know, I had to think like, oh, you know, which one was which, kind of thing. Yeah, it does have that feeling a little bit.
Yeah, so my top 10 is number 10, Peel Session, 1, 9, Garbage, 8, EP7, Incunabula, En Vain, LP5, Sickly Sweet, and then the 3, Amber, Chiastic Slide, Tri-Repetea. I'm, you know, as we wade into this middle period, again, that has like never been like my super favorite, I'm just really curious to see what's going to crack those higher numbers. Any closing thoughts on this chapter of the Autechre journey?
No, I mean, I'm excited to get to that next little section as well, because I think that's the portion I know the least well and everything. So I'm really curious. You know, we talked about it a little bit in the past, but you know, every time we make these rankings after spending, you know, 2 weeks with a record, it's always like, I always have a thought of like, maybe this is the best record, you know?
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's going to happen, you know, with these albums that I've never really felt, you know, close to that, with,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'm looking forward to it. But what do you think about LP5 and EP7? Remember, next week we'll come up with a little bonus episode with your emails. Plus, we're going to look at that second Peel Session. So send us your thoughts, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next episode, proper episode rather, in 2 weeks, we're going to go for Confield and Gantz Graph. So let us know what you think about those, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out, subscribe, leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram, all that at GonkCastPod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.